Hi, everyone, and welcome to EHS This Week's podcast for the week ending July the 11th. I'm Nicola DeCuna.
And I'm Allison Granke.
And we're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety news. So I'm going to start off with an interesting story about PPE. A pilot project at BMW Group's assembly plant in Munich has developed an ergonomic tool that protects workers from strains on their thumb joints. So with help from the Department of Ergonomics at the University of Munich, each flexible finger cot, which is the PPE they're developing, is customized to match the form and size of a worker's hand.
What are the workers using these flexible finger cots for?
Well, the devices are used in an assembly area where workers fit rubber plugs. So the assembly workers have to press in the plugs with their thumbs and close the drain holes for the paint coat. And to prevent unnecessary overstretching of the thumb joints, workers wear these finger cots over their thumbs like a second skin. The finger cots are open at the thumb joints to allow workers' thumbs to move without restriction. The plastic material is reinforced at the back of the thumbs, forming a stable splint where the thumbs are stretched. The ergonomic design spreads the exertion across the entire thumb down to the carpus. But here's the cool part. To customize each finger cot for its user, BMW measures the worker's thumbs with a mobile 3D hand scanner. So based on a standard production layout, the orthotic device is divided virtually into individual layers. So layer by layer, each of them about as thick as a human hair, the tool then is manufactured in a selective sintering process. So basically, the way this procedure works is similar to a 3D printer. A digital data set is cut into individual layers of information, and based on the layer data, a plastic powder is fused by a CO2 laser in a preheated construction chamber. This way, the plastic doesn't only mold into the layer presently created, but it also merges with the previously formed one. It's kind of an interesting and technologically advanced way to create custom PPE for workers. And it's actually really nice to see BMW take such initiative when it comes to PPE.
Yeah, for sure. That's really interesting.
I'm sure that there's going to be more technological advances in PPE coming soon.
Absolutely.
So, Allison, I think you have an environmental story for us.
I do. So, it is now the summer months, and hot summer weather can make air quality much worse for many areas, particularly cities. So, ozone pollution is common in the summertime. Ozone is a chemical formed in the atmosphere that is highly reactive to sunlight and heat. So, when the chemicals released from cars, lawnmowers, or coal combustion operations interact with the right kind of atmosphere, ozone is formed. The Environmental Protection Agency has a live map that allows you to check out the air quality index where you live. So you can find a link to this page in the resources section of this podcast. The air quality index is particularly important for outdoor workers to remain aware of. Fort Collins, Colorado is one example of an area that is particularly affected by summertime ozone. It's part of Colorado's ozone non-attainment zone, which is the Denver area region that was recently determined to be below the federal standard when it comes to ozone pollution. So according to the 2014 State of the Air report, Fort Collins ranked in the top 25 worst cities when it came to ozone pollution. The city's ozone levels are definitely negatively affected by oil and gas development, but air quality in this area is also affected during the summer months by wildfire season. Wildfire smoke can last in the air for weeks. John Fulkins, a Colorado State University air quality expert, recommends that Fort Collins residents wear respirators when outdoors during periods of wildfire smoke and buy air filters for indoors. This brings us to indoor air quality, which is particularly important from the perspective of employers everywhere during the summer months. Employers can definitely benefit from being aware of the indoor air quality of their workplace. Energy conservation measures have led to buildings that are airtight, and so that reduces outdoor air intake, but this contributes to the accumulation of contaminants indoors. So poor indoor air quality can cause headaches, blurred vision, difficulty concentrating, fatigue, and nausea. All of these symptoms make it hard for people to do their job to the best of their ability. The poor maintenance of heating, ventilating, and air conditioning systems, also known as HVAC systems, often contributes to polluted indoor air. Many employers fall into the trap of assuming their building maintenance or property managers will take care of all that stuff. But, you know, their employees' health is at stake, so it's important to go that extra mile to ensure that the building's HVAC systems are in good working condition, well-maintained, and properly cleaned for the health of your workers.
So that's all really great information for taking into consideration air quality in these hot summer months.
Absolutely. And I think, Nicola, you are going to give us an update on MSHA.
Yes, so the Mine Safety and Health Administration, also known as MSHA, has released its annual summer campaign to address roof and rib falls in underground coal mines. So summer poses dangers to coal miners because humidity can weaken mine roofs, according to MSHA's Preventative Roofs and Rib Outreach Program. In 2013, MSHA said that almost half of all roof and rib fall accidents happen in June through September. So as part of the 2014 campaign, MSHA is focusing on summer-related hazards, such as the effect of air and humidity on clay veins and other moisture-sensitive materials and rock formations in the mine roof. The agency has released safety documents, including a summer alert and a points-to-remember bulletin that contains tips for miners. designers, and you can find links to both those materials in our resource section of this podcast. In 2013, 265 miners overall were injured in roof and rib falls, which was down from 377 miners injured in 2012. But according to MSHA Administrator Joseph Main, even though there was a reduction in the number of roof injuries, there are still way too many coal miners being hurt on the job in these kinds of accidents. So hopefully this safety campaign can lead to a drastic reduction in those numbers.
Definitely sounds like they're going in the right direction though, right? Down from 377 to 265 in just 1 year, it's clear that their efforts so far have been successful.
For sure. It's really good to see that reduction taking place. Allison, I think you also have a mining story for us.
Yeah, so a little bit closer to home for us, here in Ontario, Canada, there's a summer safety blitz targeting explosives at mines. Ontario has about 40 underground mines and hundreds of surface mines and quarries. Most of these mines use explosives to blast rock into manageable sizes for processing. In July and August, inspectors will be visiting underground mines, surface mines, and quarries across the province to check that miners have proper procedures for ensuring the safety of workers who use, handle, and store explosives. So the mining inspectors will also ensure employers are complying with the Occupational Health and Safety Act by confirming that explosive storage areas are constructed in compliance with legislative requirements, that measures are in place to control inventories of explosive products, that adequate written procedures exist for the disposal of damaged explosives, that workers are trained appropriately on the safe handling procedures of explosives, and that processes exist for submitting notices of defective explosives to the Ministry of Labor. So if you work in the mining sector in Ontario, you better be prepared.
So what can companies do to be ready for a safety blitz like this one?
Well, first of all, you need to review the legal requirements and ensure that you are meeting or exceeding these requirements. You should also check your accident experience in relation to the focus of the safety blitz, so any incidents or near misses that may have occurred. Make sure you chat with your employees ahead of time too. So whether your business location is visited by an inspector during the blitz or not, it's important for employees to understand that they need to cooperate with inspectors, and it's a good opportunity to reinforce those safety lessons that the safety blitz is targeting. You should also check that you are in compliance with training requirements and that you can prove it. A lot of companies do a great job of training their workers, but a poor job of documenting that training and being able to find it at a later date when an inspector asks to see their training records. Ensure that all required documentation is on-site and readily available for the Ministry of Labor. So you can find out more about this summer safety blitz by checking out the link in the resources section of this podcast. And Nicola, I think you were going to talk a little bit about successful work culture now.
Yes, so many new business owners are struggling to figure out what makes a successful business thrive because 8 out of 10 new businesses are failing within their first 18 months. So while every business owner needs employees with the right qualifications, there's also character traits to look for, such as a positive can-do attitude, which can go a long way in contributing to a positive work culture. So to get that hum every CEO wants, both in the office and in one's industry, here are 5 keys to a successful workplace culture. So the first is to staff your team with A players because they're worth the weight. So an A player is someone who brings all the necessary qualifications to the table, and then that's something extra as a person. Of course, that isn't always readily apparent during a 45-minute interview, and it can take time to see the true colors of a talented individual to come through. This speaks to the importance of having an intuitive hiring manager, which may also be a small business's CEO. So second, don't underestimate the importance of having fun. So having fun not only helps your team do well, it's a sign that you're doing things right. Fun at work means having energy and enthusiasm while tending to the tasks at hand. So thirdly, you should make employees and clients your extended family. So a family environment significantly facilitates a team mentality, and even extending that love to clients, suppliers, and other crucial components of the business can help. So fourth, help employees understand the why behind the business and encourage different perspectives. So our team members are driven by the why of what we do, and the right content in the right person's hands at the right time can change the world. And it also helps because if you share stories, passion, and knowledge, it can help guide others and help them to grow. So fifth, suggest employees commit to lifelong learning. So by looking to uncover and promote the leader in everyone on your team, it encourages all members to follow a path of personal and professional development. And with increased knowledge, experiences, and skills, people lead a more fulfilled life, which can profit everyone within a working environment.
It can also really contribute to safety culture as well, right? If you've got everyone committed to lifelong learning, they're going to be committed to learning the best way to do things, the safest way to do things. It's definitely a good perspective to be approaching workplace safety with.
I agree. Speaking of workplace safety, Allison, don't you also have a story on that topic?
Yeah, so a study in the news this week surveyed UK workers and found that nearly half of their respondents had fallen asleep in the workplace. and that almost three-quarters of these workers were getting less than the recommended 7 hours of sleep every night. So this is just one more survey that is adding to a growing body of research that shows far too many workers aren't getting the sleep they need, and there can be serious implications for workplace culture and safety. According to the CDC, 30% of the U.S. workforce sleeps less than 6 hours a night. Most sleep experts recommend getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep. So fatigued or sleep-deprived employees heighten the risk of workplace accidents. In fact, one Harvard Medical School study has estimated that insomnia may be responsible for as many as 274,000 occupational accidents and errors in the U.S. each year, and says that the cost to companies is around $31 billion. One poll by the National Sleep Foundation showed that 20% of airplane pilots admitted to having made a serious error on the job as the result of a lack of sleep. And 18% of train operators and 14% of truck drivers say they've had a near miss due to sleepiness.
So are there workers who seem to be more at risk of safety incidents because of sleepiness?
Well, anyone whose sleep schedule is affected by their work hours is particularly at risk, so those who work night shifts definitely need to be aware. This includes workers employed in the transportation and warehousing sector, as well as night shift workers in healthcare and social assistance. Workers who hold more than one job are also less likely to get a decent night's sleep, along with those who work more than 40 hours a week. That makes sense, since you only have so many hours in a day, and if you spend too many of them working, you might not have enough time to do everything else. And for many people, work has now infiltrated their day-to-day life in the form of technology. So even if you're at home in the evening, you could be writing up a proposal on your laptop or checking work email on your smartphone. As our job increasingly makes its way into our personal life, it's interesting to see how there's a growing movement to bring our personal lives into the workplace. In fact, 29% of the UK survey's respondents also said they'd like to see sleeping facilities installed in their workplace. And research does show that a short nap of 20 to 30 minutes can boost alertness, mood, and performance at work. So maybe it's something that employers will begin to consider in the upcoming years.
That's very interesting. I guess we'll have to keep an eye out to see if any workplaces start to introduce sleeping facilities.
For sure. I think we've heard some of those high-tech companies have things like hammocks and stuff, right? We have beanbags, actually, around our office, but I've not seen anybody taking a nap in them.
At least not an authorized nap.
Not an authorized nap, no.
And I think that's it for the week. We hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week, everyone.